I am preaching today, right? I don't know if I had another fake order of service down there that I was given or not. Well, I've got to say I am truly thankful for the week last week. I don't think I could have preached if I had to after that pleasant surprise. That's the first time in all my experience here that when it was announced that I wasn't preaching, I got a standing ovation and applause. I don't know how to take that. And that comes about 2 weeks after I spoke at the CEF banquet, and Bob Riggs introduced me and told the people there, if you're looking for a good pastor, don't come here. And so I'm starting to develop a complex now. But I guess I'm more concerned about my own naivety, my cluelessness, I guess. You folks kept a good secret so well, and I can't trust my secretary now. I can't trust my wife, co-workers, but I'm so naive. I never had a hint. People have asked me, did you know anything? I'm totally clueless. I even helped Dane Leister carry the potatoes in from his car on Saturday, and I just thought the old young at heart folks eat a lot of potatoes. And never made a connection there. And then Sunday morning I get here and I meet in the foyer several families, former members who had moved away, and we're back here visiting, and I never connected the dots. I thought, this is wonderful. What a coincidence. Everybody here on the same day. And I hope I got a good enough sermon because I want to make a good impression on them. And then when Kurt got up here and started rambling on, and I didn't know, and he wasn't on the order of service, and I thought I just, you know, forgot to put it in there and threw him in. I didn't know where he was going, and I'm looking at my watch and just thinking, I wish he'd hurry up and be quiet, just pray, because I got to preach, and he's taking my time. And nothing clicked until he mentioned the year 1987. And then, okay, so we're going to get at least some recognition here, I guess. And then when he showed that Super Bowl clip, I thought, they're going to send us to Disney World. I ain't seen the tickets yet, so I'm a little disappointed, but that's all right. I'm a little old for that anyway. But it was truly amazing, truly wonderful. And that's why I say it was so emotional for me. I know I couldn't have preached anyway, and I was sitting there thinking too, if they call me up to, you know, say something, I what am I going to say? Where do I get the words? It's probably a good thing that I wasn't allowed that opportunity, because with the emotion of the time, it would have been difficult, and I don't know what I would have said. Probably something I would have regret. I'd usually say something stupid if I don't have a script in front of me, which I don't have right now, so it's dangerous. But, you know, October was that traditional Pastor's Appreciation Month, and I don't know who dreamed that thing up, whether that was Hallmark or who came up with that, but I remember when they first came out with that, it was really, really nice. You know, you would get a lot of cards from people, and you know, some churches made a big deal out of it, and but each year it kind of tapered off a little bit, and but we'd still get some cards, you know, thankfulness from people. And this year we went through the month and didn't get a card at all. And finally, toward the end of the month, last week of October, I got one card from Barry and Lisa Meyer. Bless your hearts. And I thought, they're the only people who love me. And I was talking to my wife about it, not knowing that she knew everything that was going on anyway, you know, and I wasn't complaining, you know. I said, hey, I finally got a card today. And, you know, and she said, well, you know, that whole pastor appreciation thing, it's been around a while. I think it's pretty well run its course anyway. And I agreed, you know, it's no big thing. So now I know. Now we had a ton of cards from last week. You were saving them. But I'm truly humbled, and I just want to thank everybody who had a part in this, even as deceptive as you were. Dane Leister, and I don't know how many people were back there working in the kitchen, and and serving and cleaning up after the meal. That's a lot of work. We could have all just met down at Culver's or something, and that would have been great. But it was just a wonderful day. I was riding the emotion of that all week long. And I'd like to name people, but I know I'll forget somebody. But you all know who you are. And, I love all of you. Lord just has refreshed my love for you as a congregation. And I do count it a privilege to be your pastor. And for however long the Lord gives me strength and mental capacity to do this, it's the mental capacity part that I'm concerned about. We'll do our best. And I'm getting to the age now where I know I need more help than any time at all. But God has blessed us with great people here and people who pitch in, who hang in there and do their ministries unrecognized. And some of you folks predate me by so many years. Folks that were here when I came, you're still here. You're using walkers now, but you're still here. I look to you folks as the backbone of our church. We're still today building on the foundation that was laid before us, and the folks that sacrificed to build this building, and then later when we built the addition, and the ministries that we've developed along the way, and some that we've had to push aside and replace with something else. It's all part of the evolving of ministry. And I know the Lord has good things for our church here. So God bless you all. Thank you. Well, if you'll take your Bibles now to Psalm 23, I'll get there in just a moment. This is the last of our three-part series that I've called Functional Faith, Trusting God in Everything. And before I get to the actual message, I just want to mention that Pastor Kiwit will be preaching the next two Sundays. We're paying him back for the 4 weeks that he was on a commission and with his jaw wired shut. We're pretty sure that he's got a lot to say now. And so we're going to give him that opportunity to let it out. But also, I have two vacation Sundays that I haven't used. I was holding on to those and hadn't used them yet. So I'll be taking those two Sundays, next two Sundays, as vacation days. I'll be here during the week, but just not here on the Sundays. So the timing of everything just worked out quite well. But the first, just by way of review, part one of our series here in these sermons, I entitled simply Wait, based on Psalm 37, verse 7, Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. So we have to learn. That's part of functional faith, is learning to rest in Him in the midst of all the chaos of life and all of the other things that are falling apart and all of the uncertainties. If we can just rest in the Lord and wait patiently for Him. And some of you are in the midst still of waiting on Him for various things, waiting for a doctor's report, waiting for God to answer a prayer. But that's part of our faith, is when we hang in there no matter how long we have to wait. And then the second week, we talked about relax, based on Psalm 46, verse 10, Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. Just be quiet. The term means to relax. Sit back and know that He is God. He'll be exalted in due time in this circumstance that you're in. That's part of functional faith, is learning to just sit back and let God control the things that only He can control. Well, today as we move into Psalm 23, verse 4 is the only verse I'm looking at. The word is trust. But actually, I had to develop this just a little further. So the official title is Trust the Shepherd. In all the afflictions of life, all the trials, all the uncertainties, to trust God our Shepherd. And David said in verse 4, Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Valley of the shadow of death, afflictions, troubles, trials. John Ortberg shared this, this little thought here I thought was quite interesting. He said, I'm a part of a generation of adults called helicopter parents. Some of you are of that generation or you're like that. We're called helicopter parents because we're constantly trying to swoop into our kids' educational life, relational life, sports life, etc., to make sure no one is mistreating them, no one is disappointing them. We want them to experience one unobstructed success after another. One Halloween, a mom came to our door to trick or treat. Why didn't she send her kid? Well, the weather's a little bad, she said. She was driving, so he didn't have to walk in the mist. But why not send him to the door? Well, she said he had fallen asleep in the car, and she didn't want him to have to wake up. I felt like saying, why don't you eat all of his candy and get a stomach ache for him, too? Then he'll be completely protected. But he goes on to say, if you could wave a wand, if you could erase every failure, every setback, suffering or pain, are you sure it would be a good idea? Would it cause your child to grow up to be better, stronger, more generous person? Is it possible that in some way people actually need adversity, setbacks, maybe even something like trauma, to reach a level of development and growth? I think he's on to something. Those are the things that test our faith, our resolve, our commitment, in many ways, grow it. Trials are the fertilizer of our faith. And the fact is, we should know this, that every problem, every trial, every adversity, every doubt should push us toward God, not away from Him. That's what God intended. And the only time those things push us away from God is when we do not have true functional faith, or when we misinterpret bad things. That's one of the products of faith that is not functional, not trusting God in everything. We see bad things taking place not only in our lives but in the lives of other people, and we misinterpret them. We interpret them to mean that God doesn't care, or God isn't capable, God isn't good. But Psalm 23 is a good psalm for that. Now, I know we've heard 100 sermons on Psalm 23, and I've preached on it a few times myself. And I'll admit to you that this was not my first choice of a text to preach on in this aspect of functional faith, but I kept coming back to verse 4 and the word valley. Because that's where we are tested, isn't it? When we're in the valley. Anyone can have strong faith on the beautiful, majestic mountaintop. The air is fresh. The scenery is great. It's wonderful. But it's in the valleys of life that trust in our shepherd is tested. Now, almost every version of the Bible translates this phrase, the valley of the shadow of death. That's not wrong, but it is a bit misleading. Because the unfortunate thing is we've always associated this valley with death. And we emphasize the aspect of the shadow of death, which we understand, I guess, could indicate that the valley experience is something where death is possible, but not necessarily something that's going to actually take place. It's just maybe the valley of the threat of death. Or even it does involve death, it's just kind of that shadow of the unknown as we transition from this life to the next. But I discovered that in the Hebrew language, the actual literal statement is the valley of deep darkness. That sheds a little bit more light on it. Now, I guess translators must have figured that a valley of darkness is bad, but a valley of deep darkness must be really bad, so that must involve death, so they translated the valley of a shadow of death. It's still a good translation, but I actually prefer the valley of deep darkness, because that broadens it. It makes it expressive of any experience of trouble or affliction or danger, even death. One of the things we should know, first of all, about this valley of deep darkness is the fact that everyone walks through dark valleys. Every one of us do. Now, death is probably the darkest of all. Maybe. I can think of some experiences where death might be better than the option. I'd rather die than be tortured, to be honest with you. I'd rather die than go to a dungeon prison for the rest of my life. But God's in control of that, not me. But there are plenty of other dark valleys for us to experience in life. And we know that typically we're either going into a valley, or you're in the midst of one right now, or you're just coming out of one. That's usually the way it is. That's why Job said in Job 5, verse 7, man is born for trouble as the sparks fly upward. Just one trouble after another. And some people, it just, boy, life is like that for them. Just one crisis after another. But we all have valleys. Valley of failure. Valley of broken relationships. Valley of sickness, disease, pain. Valley of divorce, betrayal. Valley of unemployment, or bankruptcy, or foreclosure. We have the valley of addiction, the valley of assault, valley of depression. The list could go on and on. Choose your valley. We all go through them. Some valleys are more difficult than others. And once we get through them, we look back on the valley and, well, maybe it wasn't as bad looking back on it now as it felt when I was in the midst of it. So we can talk about our valley with our friends. Sometimes we can even get together and we compare our valley experiences. Like guys who sit around the coffee table at the restaurant and compare their scars on their chest from their bypass surgeries. Let me tell you about my experience. Huh? That ain't nothing. Let me tell you what I went through. Some valleys are so horrible, so dark, that they're difficult to even talk about. Even though it may be years that have passed since the experience. Victims of a brutal crime, so horrible, so terrible that the emotional and mental scars are still there years after the experience itself. This past week, we commemorated Veterans Day. We're mindful of veterans who go through the rest of their lives and never talk about the horrors they experienced in battle. And if they do talk about it, it's hard to find the right words, or they have to fight back the emotion even after all of these years. You watch interviews of old World War II veterans as they're asked about certain battles that they were in. And they tear up, and the emotion is still there 70 more years after the event. But it's just as fresh in their minds as it was when it took place. And they talk of their fallen comrades. They talk about the horrible things they witnessed and experienced. I don't know what your valley is right now, if you're in one or if you've been in one. I don't know what your valley will be down the road or when it will come. I only know that everyone walks through dark valleys. The other thing I know is that valleys cause fear. David uses the word fear in this verse, although he's using it in the context of the reason why he does not fear. The fact that he uses the word at all indicates that valleys are fear-inducing experiences. Fear is an interesting emotion, isn't it? We're not all afraid of the same things. Some people are afraid of water. Others love it. Some people are afraid of heights. Other people don't mind it at all. Some are afraid of all kinds of different things. We're just different, and I don't know why. When I was a child, I hated funeral homes. I didn't even go to my grandmother's funeral as a boy because I was afraid. I didn't even like to walk past a funeral home in broad daylight alone. I never dreamed that one day I would actually work for a funeral home. I don't know how that happened, but the Lord does weird things. But as most of you know, I worked part-time for a year and a half at a funeral home here in Portage. And who'd have guessed, I actually enjoyed the work. I liked it. In fact, I almost changed careers. I was offered the opportunity by the owner to go to mortuary school and go to work for him full-time and then work it off, my tuition. I was actually considering that. But it was about that same time then that the church decided, unbeknown to what was going on there, that they needed to make my position full-time instead of part-time. And so that's why I'm not a mortician today. Wouldn't I make a good mortician? It's probably a good thing because that funeral home isn't there anymore. Maybe if I was there, it still would be. I don't know. But the reason I share that is because there's one thing, even though I enjoyed the work, there's one thing about the job that I did not like. I did not like closing up the building at night after a visitation. It still gave me the creeps. Even though I was an adult in my 30s, I'd been a police officer, I'd been in scary situations and dangerous situations, for some reason, being alone at night in a funeral home with dead people just creeped me out. And I'm going to share one more thing with you about that. But since I know you all are pretty good at keeping secrets, you're not going to blab this all over the place. But sometimes when everybody was gone, I had to lock up. I would literally run through the rooms, shutting off the lights and locking the doors so I could get out. I know, it's stupid. It's really weird. But the reason I share that with you is just to say that sometimes our fears are unnecessary and baseless. There was no ghost. There was no zombie that was going to come after me, but it was just a baseless phobia, that's all. But other times, we fear evil because there is evil. That's why David said, I will fear no evil because you are with me. He knew there was evil to fear. There were bad things that could happen to him. Bad things do happen, even to good, godly people. We live in a world where that happens. And the fears that we have are not figments of our imagination. They're not some crazy, baseless paranoia. It's reality that we fear. What are you afraid of today? Seriously, what are you afraid of today? What's your fear that you don't talk about? I bet if I handed out a slip of paper to everyone before you came in and asked you to write down the number one thing that you fear today, fold the paper and put it into a box on the communion table here, and if I went through that and just read off what they were, I bet we would have a variety of things that would be expressed, things that you fear. It's funny what we fear. You know, the day after the election, I was, on that Wednesday, I was looking for, I went online because I was looking for a map of the country to see what state went which direction in the election, and I was curious how each county in Michigan went. And for some reason, I went to Wood TV, to their website, I think because I brought up my bookmark web pages, that one caught my eye. So if they probably got something. Well, I didn't find that, but what they had over in the column on the side of their web page was a survey they were taking about the election, and there were five answers that you could click on one option of your choice. The question was, what is your reaction to President Obama's reelection? Well, it's the day after the election, so that's an interesting question to ask. What are people's reactions? And this was as of 2 p.m. Wednesday, the day after the election. And then they had the percentage of where the voting stood on each of these answers. Number one was, I'm happy, I voted for him. 24% of the people responding to the survey clicked on that one. Number two was, he has a job to finish. 11% clicked on that one. Number three choice was, I support the candidate who is elected. 9% of respondents clicked on that one. Number four, I'm indifferent. 6%. And finally, number five, we're doomed. 48% clicked on that one. Must have been a bunch of Tea Party patriots that took the survey, I guess. We're doomed. But, we don't have to fear. God is in charge, so just relax. Do good. Trust the Lord. But the next question is, how can I overcome my fear? Whatever it is, whatever you would have written on that piece of paper as your number one fear, how can I overcome my fear? Well, quite simply, we overcome fear by trusting our shepherd. That's what we are taught in Psalm 23. I know it sounds so simple. It's almost like a cliche again. You know, trust your shepherd, trust God. But if it's so simple, why is it so difficult? Why do we have so much trouble actually, literally trusting our shepherd as we should? It's difficult because we're humans. Because we are humans, we have trust issues, don't we? We don't trust everything. We even have trouble trusting God. Interestingly, we trust other people and other things often more than we trust God. That's a strange phenomenon. But this is where David's testimony of his valley experience helps us, and he reminds us of two very basic things. Number one, he reminds us that our shepherd is present. You are with me, is what he said. I fear no evil, for you are with me. And that corresponds to the verse we looked at in our previous message from Psalm 46, back in verse 1, where we're reminded that God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Present meaning he is there. Jehovah Shammah is the name for God, meaning he is there. The Lord is there. That valley you're going into, he's already there. And so David did not say, though I walk through the valley, you will meet me on the other side with a hug. No, he said, though I walk through the valley, you are with me. And so our assurance and comfort comes in knowing that at our darkest, most trying hour, God is already here. He's there. Not only that, he is our protector. Now, David makes reference to a rod and a staff, but you'll notice that the rod and the staff belong to the shepherd, not to the sheep. David did not say, my rod and my staff comfort me. Your rod, your staff comfort me. You're the shepherd. These are tools that shepherds use to guide and protect and lead their sheep. And so in this particular psalm, as David reflects on this and applies the whole image of the shepherd to God, he is using these items symbolically of the position and the responsibility of the Lord, his shepherd. That God is our protector who leads us through the deep, dark valley because he has the ability to do so. And he has the ability to protect us from anything that he does not want to touch us. And we can trust him because he knows the way. Remember this. You're not the first person he has led through this valley. He's led so many of his sheep through the very valley you're in or going into. And as a shepherd, he knows every rock, every hazard, every threat. He knows how to bring every one of his sheep safely through that valley. Because he's the most responsible shepherd there is. Now, one final thought about the valleys. The valley is never a destination. In other words, it's not where we end up. It's not where the bus stops and the driver says, "Everybody off, this is it." No, the valley is just part of the path along a greater journey, but it's not the final destination. That's why David said, "I walk through the valley, not yea, though I end up in the valley." We know the valley is deep and it's dark. But remember, the valley is where the green grass and the water are found. And so while we're in the deep, dark valley, it's the place where God refreshes us and reassures us, renews us, so that we come out of that valley better and stronger than ever before. Many of you remember May 17, 2008 is when Christian recording artist Stephen Curtis Chapman and his wife lost their 5-year-old adopted daughter Maria in a tragic accident when their son accidentally backed over her in their driveway. Chapman later shared that after Maria's death, he had to reconsider all the words of the songs that he had written and sung. And he wondered if he could still sing them, let alone believe those words. But instead of losing faith, that tragedy drove him closer to God, as those things should. And he said it brought the words and the meanings of his songs into sharper focus. And one of the songs that he pointed to was the one titled, "Yours." You hear that on Christian radio. It's a song that addresses how everything belongs to God. But Chapman said, in particular, this song was one I had to come to a new realization. That there's not an inch of creation that God does not look at and say, "All of it's mine." All of creation. From material things to human things. And so as a result of that realization, he added another verse to the song. And you hear this verse on the radio when this song is played. He said, "I've walked the valley of death's shadow, so deep and dark that I could barely breathe. I've had to let go of more than I could bear, and I've questioned everything that I believe. Still, even here in this great darkness, a comfort and a hope comes breaking through. As I can say in life or in death, God, we belong to you." Functional faith. The conviction that God, our shepherd, will do the job that a shepherd is supposed to do. Stay with the sheep. Protect each one of them. and lead them all to safety. Let's pray. Father, it's hard to know how to even bring to a close a sermon with thoughts like this, dealing with a text that is so familiar to us, but trying to put it in the context of what is experienced by your people every day. But when we are reminded that everything is yours, all of our moments and our days belong to you, our times are in your hands, what have we to fear? You are with us. So I can only pray that you would help us to remember that truth. And that each person here would be encouraged today to know that even though they're in darkness right now and they can't even see ahead of them where they're going, you already know. Because you know the beginning and the end. You know where the valley leads. You know the door of hope that lies at the end. You know the brightness of your glory that will be the result. So I just pray that you'll sustain each person when they face those difficulties, perhaps in the week ahead, and that we can have faith that truly functions as it should. Not just for our personal benefit, not just so we can feel better, but ultimately so you will be glorified in it all. We pray this now in Jesus' name. Amen.